This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Good morning, and I am joined by Mary Meyer, horticultural science faculty member at the U of M, extension horticulturist, and a friend of ours for, how many years have we been doing this, Mary?
Eight. We're in eight going on nine now, so yes.
Lots of fun. And lots of information. If you have any kind of a lawn or garden question you want to talk with Mary or send Mary a text, same number applies. Let me give you that number, and then we'll get on with it. 651-989-9226. Yes, we talk lawns and gardens 52 weeks a year because that's what people in CCO land want to talk about no matter the season. Am I right?
That's exactly right. People are remembering things from their garden right now, thinking about things. A lot of seed catalogs coming in the mail. People have made New Year's resolutions. We've got that on our Yard and Garden newsletter blog that anyone can subscribe to or go to and look at what we as professional horticulturists are thinking about doing for this year.
So like a lot of gardeners, I mean, you're the same. You think
yes,
in the depth
right,
of winter, you
right.
think about, and I have to bring up the weather because I'm thinking of how, what, and you and I talk about the damage, among other things, that the boxwood suffered last year.
And we're hoping that doesn't happen again.
Yes.
It's looking good
it
because
is.
Most boxwood is under the snow where it should be this time of year.
And
that's
and,
helped a lot.
And it's not sub-zero temperatures either.
Exactly. So we've got two. This is usually our coldest time
yeah.
of the year. And so we're really lucky not to have the winter temperatures that will be damaging for our plants. So hopefully we won't lose our snow cover and get sub-zero.
Oof.
Later in the year.
I hope so, too.
That's right. Yeah.
Call it if you have any. We can talk about indoor plants if you have a question for Mary. It doesn't make any difference. 651-989-9226. And it's still January, which means it's still free admission at the Arboretum.
At the Arboretum, yes. So this is the last weekend for free admission to the Arboretum. You can go out there, take a walk around, look at the plants in winter. There's a lot of activity going on at the Arboretum because next Friday, January 31st, is our preview party for the flower show. So they're setting up now for the flower show that will be the whole month of February. You can sign up for teas during the month of February. The flower show will be, it's a free with admission flower show. There's going to be Donna Rice, a glass sculpture with her art for sale. There's going to be a conservatory inside the Great Hall, as well as our traditional conservatory. I took a picture of a giant amaryllis.
You just showed that to me. How tall would you say that is?
That amaryllis is 3 to 4 feet tall. It's a huge amaryllis.
And beautiful.
And the flowers on it, I put my hand in front of the blooms. I spread my fingers as far apart as possible, and the blooms were still bigger than my
wow.
hand. So that's blooming in our conservatory now, but you'll see wonderful flowers throughout the building for the month of February. So that's you can go free for this last week. And then members, of course, are always free. But the flower show is the month of February.
All right.
At the Arboretum.
That was a
great,
gorgeous. Now, what exactly did you bring us? What kind of marmalade is that?
Oh, gee, I picked my Calamondin oranges. I picked 161 oranges this year off that tree.
How many?
161. Now, also, I'm not inviting people to my house, of course, to see my Calamondin. But at the Arboretum in the conservatory, there is a Calamondin filled with oranges because this is the season for citrus to ripen in the dead of winter. And my grandkids and I picked 161
wow.
Calamondin oranges. I made 4 or 5 pints of orange marmalade. This is a big harvest this year.
A labor of love.
Yes.
Wow.
I've tried to keep track of this. I have harvested over 100 before, but 161 is now the top.
But what a fun
limit.
Thing to do with your grandkids. That's
yes,
great.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. They tried squeezing them. They tried eating them. These are bitter oranges. They're really, really tart, which is good for marmalade. Marmalade is tart, isn't it?
Yes, I love that.
Yeah, it's
Can't wait to try it. Yeah. Well, thank you for that.
Oh, you're welcome. You can grow oranges in Minnesota, but the Calamondin's the easy one to grow.
It is. Yeah. Okay, I did not know that. Right. All right, if you have any kind of a lawn or garden question, 651-989-9226. We're getting calls. We're getting text messages like this text, Mary. Can you talk about growing microgreens? What's that?
Yeah, microgreens are tiny, tiny little plants grown from seed and eaten when they're about, well, less than 4 inches tall, usually around 2 inches tall. And usually these are lettuces or plants in the brassica or cabbage family. And we eat them as they germinate and grow as seedlings. Now, it's different than sprouts, which are often eaten the whole seed and root and top. These are just, you just eat the tops. So they're tiny little greens and you eat the tops. You know, I haven't seen them now for a while. You used to see them in the grocery store in a little bubble pack for sale, microgreens. They are really easy to grow. So if you just, we have some information on that on the Yard and Garden News and the Extension website. I've done that with students before growing microgreens. You basically sow the seed really thick and then cut it off with scissors just to eat the tops.
Oh,
so
okay.
You can definitely do that. You don't really need supplemental lighting to do it because as soon as they germinate and get 2 inches, you eat them. So it isn't a long-term proposition. In fact, it only takes a couple of weeks to have an edible crop.
So you don't have to be real patient for that, then.
No. And but you buying seed that's especially for microgreens, lettuces, brassica, the beets are often grown like that, and kale, right?
Okay. Very good. Let's go to the phones, Mary. Garnett's calling from Mapleton, I believe. Good morning. You're on with Mary.
Hi, Mary.
Good morning.
Say, I was wondering about my twisted stem hibiscus tree. I brought it in and probably at the end of October, November, I trimmed it back after it bloomed some, and now it's growing just wild. Can I cut it back another time?
Yes, you can. You can. In fact, pinching or taking off the top inch or two or even three, 4 inches at the tips will increase the side shoots to come out. So, yes. Kind of a, what did you call it, a wild-looking? That's a good description. Hibiscus is easy to grow and a great indoor plant, and then you put it outside again this summer.
Okay. We have to break a real fast break, so Linda, you're going to be next on the phone. Or send a text, same number, 651-989-9226. Are there any fruits out there, texter wants to know, that taste like a banana but do not have the potassium?
Oh, gosh.
I really have no idea.
Right.
We'll have to Google that.
I'd have to look that up. That's a good question for a nutritionist. I don't know that answer at all. I thought he was going to say other fruits than a banana that tastes like a banana that you can grow up here. But
not the case.
Not the case.
We'll have to do.
No.
Maybe some nutritionist will call in
yeah.
or text in. We have to take a break. We'll be right back. If you have any kind of a lawn or garden question, call it in or text in the same number, 651-989-9226. And welcome back to our Smart Garden Show here on CCU. Around every Saturday in the 8 o'clock hour, our friend Mary Meyer is with us from the University of Minnesota, helping you out by phone and by text, as usual. And Mary, as usual, we have both. We promised Linda she'd be next. Linda from White Bear Lake. Linda, good morning. What is your question for Mary?
Good morning. I have a question, yes. Growing herbs indoors, I don't have a real sunny window. So if I want to grow them in the winter, do they thrive under a plant light like rosemary and thyme and such?
Yes. Yes. If you don't have a bright sunny south window, I would definitely encourage you to use a grow light, really any kind of light. But the fluorescent bulbs are more efficient and don't have as much heat that comes out of them. So, yeah, so there are a lot of herbs that you can grow. Rosemary is kind of a picky one, although it's certainly worth trying. Thyme is pretty easy. Parsley requires really high light. That's more of an annual. You can try that one. But oregano, yes, I'd buy a variety of them, put them under the lights. You can be a light in a window as well. So whatever light, yeah. Good for you. Good, fun thing to try.
Yeah, I should say. If you're just joining us, we had a text from someone who wanted to know, is there a fruit out there that tastes like a banana but doesn't have the potassium, evidently because maybe some medication you can't condition. Now, I was looking up fruits that have less potassium, but still they have some, and which kind of surprised me. Berries, strawberries, blueberries, apples, grapefruit, pineapple, cranberries and cranberry juice, cauliflower, broccoli, and eggplant are lower in potassium.
So there's quite a few.
Yeah. So they're a choice, but they don't taste like a banana necessarily. that's the qualifier there.
Right.
All right. Texter says, good morning. How do you get rid of mallow from your yard? It really seems impossible to get rid of in our cabin yard up north.
Yes, mallow can be a very pernicious weed. So many times mowing it will get rid of it. When the person talks about being a cabin, I'm thinking maybe they're not mowing it very often, but that won't survive really low mowing conditions. But otherwise, one of the broadleaf weed killers that has two or more active ingredients should do that. You could do that in the spring when it's actively growing, or again in the fall. The only other thing would be to try to exclude the light, completely cover it up with some type of a mulch so that it can't, you know, I'd scalp the area and then try to cover it up with a mulch. But mallow can be, that can be kind of a tough weed.
Mm, interesting. So if you want to chat with Mary, it's the same number if you want to send a text, 651-989-9226. There is a line open if you'd like to talk with Mary. Texter says, I bought a perennial last spring that turned out to have aster yellows. It was in the ground for a few months, had a few feet, or rather, and a few feet from any other plants before I removed it. Would aster yellows persist in the soil around the immediate planting area?
Probably not. The only thing is aster yellows is pretty ubiquitous, so there tend to be certain plants that really get it quite easily. Echinacea, the purple coneflower, is one that gets it a lot. And it just tends to be where it lives on the plant. So if you get the best thing to do is get rid of the plant, which you did, and hopefully another plant won't get it. We have information on that on the extension.umn.edu website, and there are a long, long list of plants that get aster yellows. It's transmitted by insects, and so it's pretty ubiquitous. Hopefully you won't get it for a while.
Okay. 651-989-9226. Text, same number. Speaking of text, I have two mature blue spruce that are losing their needles. I understand this is a sickness. How can I turn this around? Thank you.
Well, there are a number of problems with blue spruce, especially when they get to be a mature size. That's about the getting toward the end of their life expectancy. So I would encourage you to go on the extension.umn.edu website, look up diseases of trees and shrubs. You can find blue spruce there. You can see pictures of leaf diseases. There are preventative fungicides you can put on, but you have to really weigh that with if you can perhaps remove some of the branches that have the disease on them versus using these as your Christmas tree in the coming years and then planting a different type of tree. So first I try to identify which disease problem you have.
Now, you mentioned at the top of the show, do you get a lot of seed catalogs in the mail?
Yes. If you order from one or two companies, then you will get on their list, and they will send you the seed catalogs. Yeah. I usually share them with the library at the Arboretum or the gardeners out there that are regularly buying them.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah, but seed catalogs are the, yeah, there's still a lot of mail order business done with the seed catalogs. Of course, you can go online and order these online as well, but it's traditionally been really fun to look at those seed catalogs and all the pictures and read the comparative information.
Especially in the middle of the winter.
Yeah, yeah, that's right, in winter.
Is it too early? Texter wants to know to prune hackberry and honey locust trees, or when is better?
You can do that now. Yes, the dead of the winter, really, that's it's good to prune those. You can see the branch structure. We've got information on pruning mature trees on the Extension website. So, yes, this is a good time to do that.
Some tree questions coming our way this morning, Mary. If I fertilize a mature, healthy tree after it has been trimmed, will it help with new growth? I fertilize my lawn two times per season, leave grass clippings on, and mulch the leaves in the fall. Would I just be adding unnecessary chemicals?
Well, many times the arborists and our tree professionals tell us that fertilizer is not a limiting factor for trees. So I would only consider fertilizing if you've had a soil test and you have a deficiency, or if you feel the tree might be under undue stress and that fertilizer might help it to grow. But I would get a soil test before I would use fertilizer on mature trees. As a caller says, is it necessary to use chemicals like this? They're already fertilizing their lawn. That lawn will compete and take up a lot of the nutrients. The tree will get some of that, though. Leaving your clippings is great because that's, again, helps the lawn and can help the tree as well. So I think the best thing to do really is get a soil test.
What's the process now? Obviously, we have snow on the ground now, but when we can access the soil, how do we send it?
Yes, you can send your soil into the University of Minnesota. You can get a package. You can buy a thing to send your soil in, a kit that tells you how to do it and has a special mailing thing to send your soil in. You can also take it over to the soil testing lab on the St. Paul campus. But all the directions for how to get the soil, how to go around your yard, taking it from several locations and mixing it up, putting it together. You really only need about half a cup of soil for the test, but you want to get a good amount, like maybe more like a quart of soil that you collect, or at least a pint or two, and mix that all up so you have a good representative sample that goes in. The cost, I think, is still $17 from the university. And all of that you can find on the website under extension.umn.edu and then search for soil test.
Something to do this spring.
Yes. And a great thing to do if you haven't done it for 5 years or so.
I think I'm going to do that very thing. Texter wants to know, what is the outlook for Japanese beetles this summer? Summer of 2018, my garden was totally infested. The following winter greatly reduced them to the point that I had none in the summer of 2019. In the summer of 2020, do I dare plant those beautiful annuals again that are susceptible to the beetles?
Well, I would try it because areas where Japanese beetle has been for many years, they see quite a cyclical pattern to the insects. They can be killed by extreme winter conditions, which it hurt our boxwood, it hurt the emerald ash border, and it could have slowed down or eliminated some of the Japanese beetles. It could have been why we didn't have so many last summer. This summer, you know, we don't know yet because we're not done with the winter to know how the winter affected them. But I would give it a try. We also have great information on the Japanese beetle, the life cycle. And we know that the earlier you can remove these insects from your own yard, the less likely you will have a big infestation. So using some preventative measures early on as they start to come out in late June can help you as well.
Good. Texter says this, I'm caring for my father's cactus plant for the winter. It is a smaller one with a bright red flower on top. How should I repot it, and how much should I water it?
Well, I would water it maybe, depending on the size of the pot, maybe once a week is enough when the soil feels dry to the touch, and then water it till it drains well out of the bottom again. As far as repotting, you can do that now. Obviously, you'd get soil from a garden center, a commercial source. You want something that's really lightweight and has a lot of air space in it, cactus-like, really good drainage. So you might find some potting soil specifically for cactus, or just really lightweight potting soil you could use as well, something that has a high porosity or air ratio that's going to be near the roots. And then just pot it up in a size pot that's not a huge big jump in size, but I would say the next size pot. Many cactus don't have to have a really big pot. They'll perform and flower even when they are in a fairly small pot.
Okay, very good. We're going to need to take a quick break here. We'll have a look at that forecast too. But we do have another half hour of the show to go, so don't wait. If you have any kind of a lawn or garden question, call it in. We've cleared the lines now. They're open for you. Or send a text. We have a bunch of those yet. So call in or text in, same number, 651-989-9226 for both phone calls and text messages. Hey, good morning. We are back with our Smart Garden Show here on CCR every Saturday in the 8 o'clock hour. Thanks to our friends like Mary Meyer from the University of Minnesota. We have a bunch of text messages, but we do have an open line if you want to talk with Mary, make it a little more personal, 651-989-9226. What were the type of oranges you said that you made this marmalade out of?
Calamondin. So calamondin is an orange that's only about 2 inches, 1.5, 2 inches in diameter.
Oh, little ones.
It's a tiny little orange. It never gets bigger than that. And I think friends in Florida would be laughing at us because the calamondin is kind of a weedy species down there and not really grown for marmalade, but for some, it's a tough little plant, so we can get it to live in the north indoors. It's a tough little
but
plant.
The reason I asked that, because the text wants to know if there are other uses besides marmalade for it.
Probably. You know, I the thing is, it has a little bit of juice. It has a lot. There are a lot of seeds. There are 3 to 4 seeds in each one of these little oranges, and more rind than there is flesh in the orange. So if you don't use the rind, you've almost got nothing here.
I guess.
So it's got to be a recipe you use the rind for. And I should look that up. I really haven't done anything with this other than marmalade, just because it's you got to add almost the equivalent of sugar in. Ratio to I don't use that much sugar though. I use about a cup of sugar to 2 pints of the fruit.
Because you said it is rather tart.
It's tart. It's very distinctive. It tastes different than an orange.
Is it an acquired taste? You would say?
Well, if you like marmalade, you'll love it.
Oh, good.
Yeah, you'll love it if you like marmalade.
All right.
Because it's just very very tart.
651-989-9226. That's the number to use for your phone call or your text. Speaking of phones, let's go back to the phones. Chris is calling from Scandy, I believe. Good morning, Chris. What can we do for you?
Well, good morning, Mary. I have a question about, I have a jade plant that I've had for years. And within the last month, I'm noticing that it's starting to shrivel up. And the trunk of it is very squishy. And I'm wondering what the cause of that is. I've never had that issue before, and can I bring it back, save it?
Well, I'm afraid that squishy trunk is really a bad sign. That really is almost decay going on in there or rotting. So the jade gets a really, really big, a big thick trunk. But if I thought you were going to tell me it's drying out. Because we see this a lot on older ones where the trunk really will dry out and almost become like a fossil. But squishy means it's, I think maybe you've overwatered it. And, of course, that would be really unintentionally. But jade doesn't need much water in the wintertime. And if it does, if you do water it, it has to drain out really well and dry out. If I were you, I would, if it's not too big and old, I would turn it upside down, take the pot off, and examine the roots. And if you don't see any white, actively growing roots, then you know that the roots are dying and that's an issue. You could try repotting it, see how that does. The other thing I do is I take some cuttings of the plant and I would get those cuttings going from the tip, some of the younger growth that's on there, and try to regenerate the plant from cuttings.
All right. Again,
6-5. Good luck. Good luck.
Thank you, Chris. Chris leaves that line open at 651-989-9226. Tech says this, my yard is heavily eroded. I plan on bringing in soil in the spring. Is there anything I can put down before or after laying the soil that will help to prevent the soil from re-eroding?
Yes, you should try erosion blankets. So you can get these at garden centers. They are just matting of straw or mulch material, sometimes with cotton netting in it or a man-made fiber in there, a man-made netting that holds the straw together. And these are made specifically to put down on areas to prevent erosion. So I would definitely look into some of those erosion blankets. They come in a number of ways, sometimes rolls, mm-hmm. sometimes things that you can spray on. Some are impregnated with grass seed as well. But try to figure out what's causing your erosion and back up from that area and try to prevent the water from coming down to doing the erosion, either through rock or some type of landscape timber, something to stop that, and then get some plants in there so that the roots will prevent the soil erosion.
Help me with this, Mary. It's a type of orchid. It looks like the text is spelling it P-H-A-L. Is there such an orchid?
Phalaenopsis.
Okay. All right.
Yeah, that's the moth orchid. That's the kind of big traditional one that we do see a lot. Julie should be here. She's much better at orchids than I am. So they have a question about
indoor lighting, about a useful indoor lighting source and temp requirements for that. Keeping my collection in a room with a skylight and winter temp is 55 degrees at night, 60 during the day. Any recommendations for that? If there's a book, maybe Julie would know.
Julie would know. Yeah. I think that sounds a little cool to me.
Oh, does it?
Yeah. I you know, 55 at night, boy, I would not go any cooler than that. I'd have to look that up and see if that's really the right temperature. 55 at night might be okay. 60 would make me a little bit more comfortable for those tropicals. And bright light conditions, they do in our winter. I mean, when have we seen the sun last year?
That's true. Yeah.
So the winter now, this is deadly for plants, even though Chris called with her jade. I mean, there's some plants just can go only so long with so little light before they really decline.
And this texture adds, looking forward to upcoming class in February at the Arboretum.
Yes, great. There are lots of classes out there at the Arboretum. I know they're... We've just been having a series on Saturday mornings on plant propagation and rooting cuttings, growing plants from seed. This is one of the really fun things that you can experiment with and create a lot of new plants.
If you want to call in your garden, lawn or garden question, or text it, same number, 651-989-9226. Let's go back to the phones. Ann is calling from Otsego, I believe. Hi, Ann. What is your question for Mary?
Hi there. I have a beautiful Christmas cactus that blooms at different times of the year, but now the beautiful middle is green and all the outside leaves are red.
That red is a sign from it's really getting high light intensity. So it's actually not a bad thing. Sometimes cooler temperatures can bring on that red coloration also with the anthocyanin chemicals will come out. So cooler or bright light conditions will bring that on. It's not a bad sign.
Here's a text, Mary, I don't think we've ever had before. What differentiates a fruit from a vegetable? Like I heard a tomato is a fruit.
Yes, the fruits have seeds. Vegetables is a vegetative fleshy part that we eat with no seeds. So a carrot has no seeds inside, so that's a true vegetable. And tomato is really a fruit. So anything that has a seed inside is a fruit. And, of course, we've done our best to get rid of those seeds, like in a banana that has the triploid and the seedless watermelon. We've gotten rid of those, but those are the true fruits.
Speaking of bananas, we did, for those joining us late, we did get a text about a fruit that maybe tastes like a banana but doesn't have the potassium because some people can't have those levels of potassium. Here's one that says the same thing. I love bananas, but I can't have even a piece of one because of the potassium. Must constantly check potassium and sodium at all foods.
Wow. Yeah. That's really interesting.
That kind of reduces your choices, I guess.
It does, but as you said, there are berries were the first one.
Lower potassium.
Lower potassium, yeah. Right.
Texter wants to know, where can I purchase an Easter cactus? Can one be ordered online?
Well, Easter cactus are kind of gangly looking. They have a big, long, more of a individual big long leaf that's kind of a cactusy look. So we don't see them in the store so much because they are kind of gangly and not so attractive. They have a great big flower that's, again, different from the Christmas cactus flower. I would look at the garden centers, even call some garden centers and ask them. Maybe they can order one for you. I'm sure you can get one through a mail order company. If you Google that, you'll find somebody that's selling it online. But locally, I would try some of our bigger garden centers like Bachman's, Otten Brothers, Dundee. Tonka Dale has a lot of houseplants over on the west side of town. So they very likely could be there or they could order it for you.
Okay. You know, Mary, as usual, we get a lot of new listeners to the show. And from time to time, you've already done so. But let's give the website at the U of M and some of the things you can really find there if you're looking for certain
things. Yes, the website is extension, extension, extension.umn.edu, and then click on a garden or yard and garden. We do have a search engine there, and you can find that. Sometimes I just use the Google search engine, but I put extension Minnesota tomato plants. And that will pull in the information from our website as well. But there are many things you can find there. We write regular articles, timely articles, those of us on the horticulture staff. And then Julie has done a great job of creating things like a calendar for your lawn, what to do when on your lawn. She even has a calendar up there now for poinsettia. And how to get your poinsettia to rebloom, if you have one from Christmas, what to do with it for the whole rest of the year. And then we have the caller about the blue spruce, what's wrong with my blue spruce. So you can look at pictures of diseases on blue spruce and figure out which matches with yours as well. And then we have the Ask a Master Gardener link that's there if you want to send a text message or email anytime. We have a group of master gardeners who answer questions online.
And master gardeners are educators. That's what
master
they do.
Master gardeners are educated. A big class now, over 300 people taking the training throughout Minnesota online and in person. January is the training month, for that program.
All right.
Yeah, it happens in almost every county in the state and almost every state in the United States.
Excellent. Well, I know we have an award-winning website there at the U of M, for sure, with all the good work
you guys do.
Yes,
and it's localized information for Minnesota.
Mary, we have to take a quick break, so hang on. Have some of your marmalade, and we'll be right back after this break. We have more show to come, but don't wait. If you do have a lawn or garden question, call it in or text it in, same number, 651-989-9226. Welcome back to our Smart Garden Show here on WCCO. Mary Meyer from the U of M is helping you out today. 651-989-9226 is the number for the phone calls or texts. And we have a bunch of both, Mary, so let's put you back to work here. Marion is calling from St. Paul, I believe. Marion, you're on with Mary.
Yes, I am part of the Minnesota Orchid Society, and our show is at Como this weekend, 10 to 4. There's a $5 admission charge, which goes to Como.
Marion, thank you for calling and reminding me about this. That is a fabulous show.
Is it?
And yes, there's so many beautiful orchids at Como. And as she said, Como is usually free, free will donations there. But for the orchid show, which is well worth it, they do charge a fee. So, yes, I'm sure there are people there. You'll see a lot of Phalaenopsis, and there will be people there who can talk to you about orchids as well. But fabulous reminder. Thank you, Marion.
Thanks, Marion. Marion leaves that line open at 651-989-9226. David is next, calling from St. Croix Falls, I believe. David, thank you. What can we do for you?
Yeah, see, we used to have a lot of mushrooms grown on our property. In the past few years, the number has been going down quite a bit. And I think it might have something to do with the buckthorn taking over the area. Is there any connection with that?
You know, it very likely could be, David. Mushrooms grow on organic matter in the soil, and different types of organic matter yield different mushrooms. And so, yes, if the organic matter in your soil changes and there's less diversity there, it's very likely could affect the mushroom population. Yeah, unfortunately, buckthorn tends to create a monoculture when you have it. So if possible, I would remove the buckthorn. If you can pull it out when it's small, you can get the roots and the whole plant rather than cutting it off. It's better if you can pull it out, but that can only happen when it's small. So good luck with removing the buckthorn.
That is really a tough job.
It is a tough job. You have to really keep at it. Plant other native plants, our viburnum, dogwoods, things like that, that will grow in the shade in similar conditions.
Boy, as I said, I've removed quite a few, but you're right. The smaller the better, because it doesn't take much to grow a little bit, and there you can't even yank them out.
It's hard.
All right, let's see. Who is next here? It would be Jeannie calling for Wasika, I believe. Jeannie, you're on CCO.
Hi, good morning, Mary.
Good morning.
Mary, I have a question about tapping the maple trees. I'm anxious to get sap, and I know that it's supposed to be above freezing the next couple of days and possibly the next week. Would it hurt the maple trees to tap them this early or to take the taps out if it would get cold again?
Well, this is really early. I kind of doubt it's going to run. Just because we're so still in the dead of winter.
Not even February yet.
Right. And so with the trees in our area and our climate, I just don't know if they really will give you much sap this time of year. You know, when it gets into spring, they come and go. It'll run and then it won't run depending on the weather conditions. But in the dead of winter, I don't know. Now, we have Richard DeVries. He manages our sap out at the Arboretum, and you can read on our Nature blog how to do it. So I guess you could try it and see what would happen. I just think it probably nothing is going to happen.
Okay.
It's the roots are too cold, and the day length hasn't gotten long enough yet to transition.
Wayne in Forest Lake is next up on CCO. Wayne, you're on with Mary this morning. Thank you.
Yes, good morning.
Good morning.
I normally plant a bunch of impatiens in bags and hang them on the front of my garage on the northeast side of the house. They do really well, and lo and behold, about the latter part of the early part of summer, I see little volunteer impatiens growing in my landscape rocks. So my question is, I planted about 100 tulips and daffodils in a little plot this last fall, and you know, when tulips grow up and die, they're kind of unsightly. I was wondering, is it possible to get some impatient seeds and seed in amongst those to provide a nice ground cover and some color once the tulips die?
You could try that, Wayne. I know that my sister has grown impatiens from seed, and she has the seedlings come up on their own. They tend to be all a similar dark magenta color, so the flower color of seedlings is going to be limited. It's also going to require a moist environment for those seeds to germinate and grow. Impatiens like more moisture than tulips do in the summer. Tulips would like to have a dry condition in the summer. So I think, yes, you can get that going there. You could try seeds. which are fairly expensive. I would encourage you to try to get disease-resistant impatiens from that downy mildew, which did devastate a lot of impatiens the last few years. But that's a fun project to try.
Thank you, Wayne. Let's go to St. Paul. Marge is waiting there. Marge, good morning. You're on CCO.
Good morning. I'm calling regarding Christmas cactus. I have three plants, and two of them are, I started from the original one, which is a very old plant. At any rate, I did not get one bloom on any of my plants this year.
So, Marge, it sounds like maybe you have gotten the blooms other years. Christmas cactus will bloom if the day length is short, 8 to 10 hours of light for about a month. Or it will bloom if it's in a really cool place. So the cool temperatures will substitute for the short days. So you have to do one or two of those things. If you did that, or if it was in conditions like that, you still didn't get any blooms, I would try some liquid fertilizer. So half strength in the wintertime is a good rate to use.
Texter says this, Mary, I have a large ivy. Can I split this now before spring? It is large and seems very root-bound.
Yes, I would try that. The days are getting longer. Give it as much light as possible.
Okay.
Yeah.
This texter is looking for a good low-light indoor plant.
Low-light indoor plants. So that's how they are grouped when you go to garden centers. You can actually find a lot that will live in low light. So a peace lily is a big one that will live in low light. The new most popular one is called a ZZ plant. So that's the last letter of the alphabet, ZZ. It has big, thick leaves on it. Quite attractive, but so ZZ is another one. Sansevieria, the mother-in-law's tongue, or snake plant is a better name for that. That's a very low-light plant that you can get in your house to grow. So, yeah, there are a number of these. Pothos is one that's very easy, a vine-like plant that we've grown for years. But garden centers will be a great help to you. There are a lot of them that will work.
Yeah, good resource. Texter wants to know, are we too far north to grow pawpaw trees?
Unfortunately, we are. Pawpaws are a native fruit to Kentucky, kind of the middle Atlantic states. And I think it's zone 6 where they're hardy. That's an amazing plant, amazing fruit. I've only eaten pawpaws twice in my life, but they taste like banana custard.
Oh, really?
It's amazing. Vanilla or banana custard, a very unusual fruit, extremely perishable, so you never see them in the stores.
Oh. We talked about microgreens at the start of the show. Texter now said when you trim the microgreens with the scissors, do they regrow or do you have to start over?
Usually they don't. They don't usually regrow. What will happen is maybe more seeds will germinate, and you might get elongation of the stem that's there, but usually it's one harvest.
Is having wood mulch all around the perimeter of my house going to cause any problems such as insects? I've used cedar before and cypress.
Probably not. The mulch will be decaying. Usually the insects that will feed on that mulch and draw down, decay that mulch are normal soil decaying insects. So, no, not necessarily. I would not worry about that.
There's a tool question, hand tools. I need to do some pruning on our ornamental tree. Do you use a bypass or an anvil, would you think?
Always a bypass.
Oh, okay.
Always a bypass.
Always a bypass.
Yeah, anvil is a kind of, the blade hits a perpendicular angle. Anvil to me is not, I don't know why it was ever even created. A bypass is it. Bypass is the way to go. Yeah.
All right. Texter says, we had a very low raspberry and blueberry crop last year. Was that typical last year? Do you think it was due to the harsh winter last year?
I actually haven't heard anyone say that. So it could be. Plants could have been damaged from winter conditions. That's very likely. Could have been. Hopefully this year will be better.
I hope so. Texter agrees with you. Obviously, somebody has experience. No, tapping maples now will not give usable sap. Trees bud based on solar time as well as temperatures. Drilling holes now is too early and could cause damage or close up before springtime sap runs. Patience makes the best syrup.
Thank you. Thank you.
That's so true.
Yeah. Good information from someone who's been doing it. That's what we need.
Let's talk a little bit again. Well, I'll tell you what. I think we just got a text, and I don't want to leave somebody out here. I grew dahlias last year for the first time, and they were amazing, but I don't think they will last until 10-3. Oh, there's going to be a wedding on October 3rd. I'd love to grow flowers to use. Do you think they'll last until October 3rd, dahlias?
Okay, so dahlias do their best blooming in September and October.
Ah.
So, yes, I'd give it a go.
All right. Well, we are just about out of time. Let's do two things. Let's remind our listeners of the great website you guys have.
extension.umn.edu and click on Garden.
And the Arboretum?
Arboretum, the last week of free admission at the Arboretum. Then next weekend, the flower show begins.
And we had a caller that reminded you of something about, I can't remember what it was. Orchid Show.
Oh, the Orchid Show. Yes, thank you. Como's Orchid Show is on this weekend.
What's this weekend?
This weekend, right now.
All right. Yeah. And again, the Arboretum is still free. You got this weekend to get out there.
To get out there, take a walk.
All right. Mary, always a pleasure. Thank you for all the help.
Thank you. Pleasure to be here. Usual.
Mary Meyer from the University of Minnesota.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.